From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.
This is Master Obi-Wan Kenobi. I regret to report that both our Jedi Order and the Republic have fallen. Our future is uncertain. But in time, a new hope will emerge.
Coffee with Kenobi presents Rebels Reactions with Dan Z and Corey Club.
All troopers, focus your fire on...
on the Jedi.
Come with us. Learn what it truly means to be a Jedi.
I'm in space. And I'm about to die.
We need an opening.
Found one.
What did he say?
He said hello, hyperspace.
Oh, and guess what? This is the podcast you're looking for.
Welcome to Rebels Reactions, where Coffee with Kenobi takes an in-depth look at the hit TV series, Star Wars Rebels. Today we are talking about the season finale episode, Twilight of the Apprentice. Fantastic episode, a lot to talk about, so we're just going to jump right into it. Joining me tonight, by the way, my name is Aaron, if you don't know, I'm your host. Joining me tonight is a bunch of people you already know. We've got some former guests, former hosts, everybody's here tonight. Joining me first, of course, former host and Coffee with Kenobi founder, Dan Z. How are you doing, Dan?
I am doing wonderful. I really like what you've done with the place, Aaron. I'm impressed.
Thank you very much. Thank you for letting me run with it. I'm enjoying it.
My pleasure. It's really unique. We were joking about giving up one of your kids, one of your babies, but you're doing a good job. I really appreciate how strongly you've made this program. You made it even better, and I applaud you.
Well, thank you, sir. Thank you. I appreciate it. Also joining us tonight is one of our featured bloggers and recent guest to Coffee with Kenobi, to Rebels Reactions, excuse me, Melinda Wolf. Welcome back, Melinda.
Hi, Aaron. Hi, everybody. Good to be back.
Well, it's great to have you back. We're going to have a great discussion. And last but not least, we have David Motters. How are you doing, David?
Good, Aaron. Glad to be on with you guys.
Excellent. Well, definitely, I'm happy all three of you could join us tonight. This is going to be a fun discussion. A lot of great things happening, and let's just jump right into it. The episode all takes place on Malachor. A lot of fun and exciting things happening there. I mean, we see the return of one of our favorite villains. We see a new Inquisitor. We see all sorts of things happening in this episode. Off the bat, we'll start with ladies first, Melinda. What were your thoughts about this episode overall?
Oh, I thought it was by far the best episode of the entire series, Aaron. I was just blown away, and I've watched it more than once. I just love the way that Ezra was dealt with here, and there have been little showings along the way. Might he, turn toward the dark side? And there were definite inclinations tonight, and how manipulation came into play, and how the best kind of lie is a lie that, and manipulation, has little touches of the truth in them, so that you can convince your prey to go along with you or to believe your lie. As Darth Maul, he says he's not a member of the Sith anymore, but how he tried to convince Ezra to follow him, and how I really liked how Kanan actually was dealt with, and how he was called upon to use other senses at the end of the episode. I could say so much more, and if you give me the opportunity to, as we converse tonight, I will. I will say this, though, and I'm just throwing this out there. It would be nice when a character dies if they would just leave him dead. So guess who I'm talking about?
Well, this is Star Wars, you know, so not everything happens the way we need it to or want it to.
Only person who stays dead when they die in the fictional world is Uncle Ben from Spider-Man. That's it.
Well, in all fairness, Aunt Beru and them died as well. They stayed dead, a little french fried. But Dan... What are your thoughts overall on Twilight of the Apprentice?
Twilight of the Apprentice is a mixed blessing for me because when I watched it, I was very excited about seeing it, of course. And when I watched it, I was under the weather, and I'm still wondering. My wife and I were debating today what that term actually means. Are you ever over the weather? But I digress. I think it's a bittersweet episode because I've always loved Ezra, and I found myself – Darth Maul drives me nuts – in the best possible way. And as I saw him starting to corrupt Ezra, I found myself very frustrated with that. And the ending, which I'm sure we'll talk about, I found myself mad, like legitimately mad and annoyed at Ezra. And it drove me nuts that I would actually let myself be impacted by a fictional world in that fashion. But he's almost like the little brother that everybody has or would like to have. And to see him completely... ignore the training he's been given so powerfully by Kanan. That threw me. So that's kind of that was the main thing that stuck out to me.
Okay. David?
Well, though, Dan, oops, can I interject? I'm so sorry, Aaron. But Dan, you know, there's the parallel to Anakin, who had such excellent training from Obi-Wan, but allowed himself to be manipulated. And unlike Anakin, at the end, Ezra realizes that he made a mistake by giving in to the anger and fear, and he recalled the lessons that Kanan taught him.
See, I don't think so. He opened the holocron. He didn't learn anything.
Well, there's a lot to debate on that topic,
yes,
too.
Yes,
that's the ending of that. There was so much in that ending of the episode that can be translated in so many different ways, and definitely that's something we want to tackle in our discussion today. David, what were your impressions of this episode?
Yeah, no, I'm so glad that Melinda and Dan hit two other characters than what I was going to mention in the initial thoughts. The first one, and I thought this might be a kind of a neat way to do this, is that I was going to interject a bit of what a 9-year-old thinks about this, my daughter, and watching it with her. And I, the first thing that I think about when I look at this episode is obviously the big question, is Ahsoka alive? And so I'd asked my daughter, Lena, I said, well, what do you think? Is Ahsoka alive? And Lena looked at me and she says, well, I don't know. And she's like, well, I want to watch it again. So we do that. And she says, well, I still don't know. And I said, well, what do you want? And she says, well, I want her to be alive. And then she looks at me and she says, well, what do you think? And I was saying, well, I hope she's alive. And that was my first reaction after the first, you know, two times watching it. And so Lena and I are of the bent. We're going to go more positive. We think she's living on, perhaps in that convoy. Or Convor, I'm not sure how we're wanting to say it. But there's that. And then there's kind of like, and I'm going to tease Dan here a bit. It's a certain point of view, kind of
yes.
Referencing him and Amy's recent article on StarWars.com. And just thinking about how we think of this as adults, just like Dan was mentioning a piece of fiction, but also how do kids see this. And it was fun. And I was hoping that maybe as we go through, I can kind of interject a little bit of the stuff that my daughter said on some of these little things that are kind of fun throughout and sometimes confusing, kind of like Melinda said of, you know, on Darth Maul and being evil and all that kind of stuff. So there's a lot of other fun comments we can make throughout. So those are my initial impressions.
Perfect. Excellent. Thank you so much. I mean, every one of y'all hit the topic right on the head. I mean, this has been, there's so many different angles to go through in this. Here we go right away. We're going to jump right in here with, hit on a few things right off the bat. We see a new Inquisitor. So this is overall the fourth Inquisitor we've seen. And this one, of course, gets captured. Then we see other Inquisitors throughout this match that we've grown to respect and go through. We're seeing a lot of, we see them fall. And they're new tactics as well from these Inquisitors. What, if anything, impressed you with the Inquisitors and these new tactics that they were revealing in this episode with the flying lightsabers and items like that? Start with David.
Well, Dan was tweeting about this, I don't know, a week or two ago. I think my response to that was, I think it looks kind of cool, and visually it just really lights up the sky there above the Sith temple and the charred bodies and stuff on that battleground. But boy, it doesn't make sense to me, the twirling lightsabers, particularly because we haven't seen it before. But I guess I'm going to go with it because it is a kid's show. It is animation. I thought it looked cool as all get out, but my brain was just saying, I'm not sure how that works.
Exactly. Definitely it's one of those things that we don't see, and obviously was there for story plot details, everything. But we see the return also of Darth Maul. We, of course, haven't seen, we've got the comics with Darth Maul, which I'll be the first to admit, I'm not a comic reader, so I've not read Son of Dathomir or know what happens there. So the last time I saw Maul was, of course, at the end of the Clone Wars. And we all know what happens at the end of the Clone Wars. Of course, bringing Maul back, of course, was questionable then, but even more questionable now, impacting this episode, because he played such a huge part. Melinda, how did you feel seeing the return of Darth Maul, well, now just going by Maul, in this episode? Because he was a pretty, they played him pretty heavily through this.
Well, I mean, Aaron, I alluded to it, inferred it in my opening comments. I was one of the maybe few fans who was not happy about Darth Maul even coming back in Clone Wars. To me, he was killed at the end of Phantom Menace, and he should have just stayed dead. And I thought that it was, I hate to say this, too soap opery to bring back a dead character to life, because that's something that's done a lot in soap operas. And I know that there are a lot of Darth Maul fans out there. I thought he was a cool character, even though he was a Sith. But a really cool character in The Phantom Menace, and Ray Park did such an awesome job playing him. But I have not been a fan of him coming back in any of the animated shows. So I'm making that public for anybody that's ever missed any comments I've made online about that. So I think, I don't know if maybe they could have used an Inquisitor with really strong force powers to disguise him or herself to play the shadow there who was Ezra's teacher, if you want to put it, you know, even go out on a limb and stretch that. But I don't know. I just think that they should have come up with some other character to do that. Since Maul was brought back, I thought it was very interesting that he's not really good. He definitely isn't on the light side of the Force, but that he, to a certain extent, has changed allegiances to a certain point and was fighting with the Jedi against the Inquisitor. So,
but did he really change loyalties? That's the question. He's not fighting for necessarily the Emperor. He's fighting against him because he's furious about how he was treated. But doesn't but he's also going to fight against, as we see in the episode, he winds up fighting against Kanan and Ahsoka as well. His ultimate goal is his own end game at this point. And he's got quite the prolific end game too, as we come find out, because the temple they're at is a weapon he's trying to gain the power on so he can sow his revenge, destroy his enemies.
And Aaron, if I said that he changed loyalties, that's not what I meant. I meant he aligned himself with the Jedi, not joining the light side of the Force, but he aligned himself with the Jedi because they are a means to his Maul's, his end. And that is to unlock the, you know, the mysteries of the Sith Temple and everything. So, and destroy the Emperor.
Exactly. And I mean, obviously Maul has had his issues through the years. He was cut in half by Obi-Wan Kenobi. He was left on a garbage planet where obviously he went insane, for lack of a better term. David, I know you're the psychologist here, so if there's a better term for Maul, please interject.
The stark raving lunatic.
I'll take it.
Yeah. I'm schizophrenic, and so am I.
So he's definitely had his issues to deal with, and it's culminated to this moment. How far do you think he's willing to go to see his endgame completed? Or I know he wants to see the destruction of his enemies, but are we looking at somebody who's willing to put it all on the line and even sacrifice his life to achieve his end game? Dan?
Well, I would imagine that. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Dan.
That's okay. I don't think he's willing to sacrifice himself because, you know, you can take a boy out of the farm or whatever. You can't take the Sith out of him. He may not be a Sith, but he still is fueled by Sith anger and power. And a Sith, one of the reasons a Sith live so long, if they're not cut down by their apprentice or their master, is because they believe they can subvert the natural order of life and they are above it. So I don't think he's going to sacrifice. He'll sacrifice everyone in the universe if he has to defeat Palpatine, but he's not going to sacrifice himself. I think he's shown that time and again. I want to talk about Son of Dathomir real quick. I did read the 4-issue series, and it was probably my least favorite Star Wars comic I've ever read. If that tells you how I felt about it, I just felt very forced. And I feel like those issues would have been in the Clone Wars, the animated series, they would have been much more compelling. But essentially what happens is this. Darth Maul gets the Black Sun together as he did in season 5. And they unite and they sort of have a full-on assault. And then Count Dooku, quote, is on Darth Maul's side temporarily, even though everyone knows, including Darth Maul, that he's just a double agent. And then at the end, Count Dooku and Grievous kill Mother Talzin, and Darth Maul, his army is depleted, and he gets on his shuttle and he flies away. And that's what happens to him.
Really?
Yeah. And that's canon, so.
But didn't, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't Mother Talzin die in one of the...
The Mace Windu Jar Jar.
Jar Jar?
Well, I mean, it's implied, but she comes back because she turns into a green mist when she, quote, dies. So she doesn't die until Son of Dathomir.
Okay. So another revival, in other words. So perfect. Well, definitely I'll have to cross Dathomir off my list of comics that I need to read. But definitely definitely. Thanks for that insight, Dan. That's awesome.
Sure. I'm here to help.
Absolutely. I know. Well, in this episode, of course, we have everything going on, and we wind up seeing Maul begin to believe that he is luring Ezra to be his apprentice, which leads to a all-out brawl between Maul and Kanan, because Kanan is obviously very protective of Ezra. And we see Maul wind up taking, due to injuring Kanan and taking his sight, essentially. From what you can see from the following scenes, strengthened, actually, Kanan's position. We'll start with you, David. When Kanan got injured, and all of a sudden he begins to focus inward on himself and then the force in his training, how do you see this affecting him in the future? Where do you see this taking him?
Yeah, this is going to be really interesting to see where this goes. And it's in the notes that I took before, you know, in the last several days before getting online with you guys, that's one of the questions I have in terms of the character development of all these guys, all the Ghost crew. And in particular for him, one of my questions is, is he going to be permanently blind all of next season, or will he stay that way? I get a sense he'll probably stay that way and perhaps grow in the Force more and more, kind of similar to what happens to persons who do lose a sense. One of our senses that seems like the other ones grow in strength. And you just get the feeling that he's going to really develop into a better and better mentor to Ezra, which is going to be huge. It's going to be critical, particularly with what all of us have been saying here in the first few minutes, which is, you know, this is going to be a dangerous time for Ezra and opening up that Sith holocron. And like Dan says, we're not sure that he learned anything by the end of this episode, except to get in more trouble, it looks like. So I'm hoping we'll see that. And I guess the question I was just wondering what you guys thought real quick is, when that helmet appears, is that the Force putting that helmet there, or was that helmet there for thousands of years? What do you guys think?
I thought he picked it up off of one of the, I mean, are they really statues or are they basically human form in stone? Like, like the people,
Medusa?
You know, the biblical story of, you know,
Lot.
People, yeah, like people being turned into pillars of salt or the, what is the 40 warriors of Ronin in China? I think it's China, you know, where you have these warriors who are basically frozen and no longer of skin and made up of skin and bones, but some other matter. And I mean, I just assumed it was stone or whatever, but I mean, in this episode, and because I just watched it for the last time this evening, and it looked like Kanan picked up that helmet or mask part of a helmet, right, that was laying at the base of one of the fallen Jedi or Sith. Who knows what who it really was, but.
The way I was looking at that, especially, and it goes back to what Ezra said when they first landed and started going through everything, how everything looked charred and burnt. You see statues and sculpts, and you can tell they're human form, but you don't get a lot of detail. Matter of fact, that's where Ezra finds the Kylo Ren type lightsaber lying in there. Based on that description and from what I was seeing, I was picturing more of a post Vesuvius eruption, where you just have the molds of the bodies just where they used to be, where obviously this weapon thousands of years before they got there was detonated and stopped the fighting, but it killed everybody, Sith and Jedi, and the helmet. Probably, from my point of view, was probably there the whole time.
Mm. Yeah, the reason I ask is I've heard some Star Wars fans say they kind of feel like the Force was there to help Kanan, and I've heard some people say they think it was there for thousands of years. I was just curious what you guys thought.
I
think it was there always, but
so do I. I think it was there, and I don't know, Aaron, how much you want us to go into Kanan, where he's at now based on the blindness. Do you want to talk about that now?
Well, yeah. I mean, this is where we were talking about now. I mean, whether this is going to be a disability, or is this going to be an advantage for him going forward?
I think he's going to be like the blind masters, the blind ancient kung fu masters that are made popular in film and folklore that Freddie Prinze Jr. is such a big fan of. I think he's going to be more powerful. Yes, he will have some limitations and he will have some struggles, but I don't expect that to hold him back for long in season three. I really feel like he's going to be even more focused and centered on the Force than he ever was. And he'd already become a Jedi Knight in a very profound and perfunctory way. So I think he's going to become more powerful than he could possibly imagine. And that makes me worry that, well, I don't want to break my speculation rule, but Kanan's going places. Kanan's going places. I'll tell you that. And I can announce now, but Freddie Prinze Jr. will be joining us next month, and we're going to ask him that very question.
Oh, wonderful.
Yes.
Excellent.
And I mean, Kanan even showed signs right from the get-go. And, you know, maybe some of the, and I'm not being critical or anything, some people probably have watched the episode only once. And I don't know how many times you guys have watched it, but I've watched it in the last week since I've been back from Japan numerous times, just getting ready for tonight. And as soon as Kanan puts on that mask and stands up with his lightsaber and he knows that Maul is coming for him, his hearing in particular picks up the slightest nuance of Maul's movement. And you see Kanan shift his stance just slightly to the right. And every time that Maul moves, Kanan adjusts his body to where Maul is, or coming at him or behind him or whatever. And he's able to do this, I know, or I mean, I'm just saying I know, but because he's a Jedi and he can just pick up on these things so much more quickly than the average person. And like what Dan says, you know, whether he ever gets his sight back or not, it's just going to make him a much stronger Jedi and a better teacher even to Ezra. So that's my opinion.
Perfect. Excellent. Let's shift gears a little bit and talk about Ezra. Because we've been talking about Kanan. We've been talking about the Inquisitors, Maul. Let's talk about Ezra. Ezra definitely has a big part in this episode. We see him dabbling a lot with the dark side from the moment he gets separated from Kanan and Ahsoka to there at the all the way through the episode. Where is our Padawan going at this point? We see him use with Maul. Maul is very influential. Obviously, he has learned from the best when it comes to manipulation of people. He learned straight from Sidious, apparently, through the years. How hard was it, do you think, for Maul to push Ezra over that edge? Dan?
Well, that's my quibble with this episode. I feel like, and we've seen Ezra sort of going back and forth a little bit, but not to the degree. Melinda mentioned earlier the comparison, an apt comparison to Obi-Wan and Anakin, but I've always believed that Kanan and Ezra have a much more sincere, legitimate bond that is much more nurturing. While it's not always smooth sailing, there's the respect there is very different from Anakin and Obi-Wan. I believe that if Obi-Wan and Anakin had this similar training and bonding that Kanan and Ezra had, there would be no Darth Vader. So because of that, seeing Ezra suddenly decide I've got to trust this guy. Now, Ezra is a trusting guy, and to be fair, just about everything he's done, including Hondo and Naka, everyone that he has trusted, it's ended up working out for him fairly positively. So I think he wants to believe Darth Maul, and Darth Maul is very charismatic. I mean, he looks like the devil for a reason. You know, even the devil can cite scripture to prove his purposes, and he picks up those little threads that he knows are going to stimulate Ezra or anyone who's earnest and powerful. And he uses them and he manipulates them, and it bothers me that he goes so quickly away from the training of Kanan, who he knows very well he shouldn't be tempting himself and putting himself in those waters. It's very much like if you're a parent and you don't want your child to get all those cookies, why are you leaving them out on the edge so the kid can grab them? Kanan didn't do that. He didn't leave the cookies out. And all of a sudden, Ezra is ravenous for this hunger and knowledge. And what is it that he's trying to learn? He's trying to learn how to be better, which is very much like Anakin. But he's also trying to sort of forge his own path, which seems somewhat surprising because the Ghost crew is his path. So I find it somewhat disjointed that he's so easily turning away from Kanan. You can't dabble in the Sith. You can't open a Sith holocron. I mean, his eyes turn Sith color at the end. You can't do that half-heartedly. There's some problems here with Ezra.
But there have always been issues with Ezra, Dan.
See, I don't think so.
From the very beginning of the series. And Ezra, though, at the very end, the last thing he does is not open that Sith holocron. I mean, at the very end, he realizes that for one thing, he didn't know that Maul was who Maul was. And
Kanan tells him.
Well, yes, he finds out, but during that time when Maul and Ezra are making their way toward the Sith temple, and what does Maul say to that he should be called the old teacher or whatever? And Ezra says, "Call me Jabba," which I thought that was a hoot.
yes,
but I mean, at the end, Ezra does realize that he stepped over the line and tells Kanan, as you know, that basically that, you know, he made a mistake, and the mistake really was made because Maul was preying on Ezra's fears and, you know, saying, well, if you help me, you'll be helping your friends. Do you want to, you know, the next time you hesitate, it could be, you know, cost you your life or the life of one of your friends, someone who you really care about. And that's a really strong message to give to someone, especially someone as young as Ezra, who does, you know, he's only, 13 years old, I think he's supposed to be-ish. And, you know, so he doesn't want to lose his friends. He doesn't want to lose his life. And maybe you have, and I'm not saying this is right or wrong, okay? I'm not implying that it's right to do the wrong thing for the right reason. But sometimes people, you know, look at, well, if I do this, this might happen. Or if I don't do this, this might happen. So I think that's why I made the connection to Anakin and Palpatine, because Palpatine, the great manipulator that he was, did exactly that to Anakin. And I do disagree about Anakin's and Obi-Wan's relationship. I think it was a lot closer than most people give them credit for. It was just, you know, different. And it'll be interesting to see. In Ezra, I think he has a lot of potential, and I hope he turns away totally from the dark side and follows Kanan treads those light sideboards, as I like to say.
Perfect. Well, and Aaron, I would just piggyback on what Dan and Melinda are saying regarding Ezra. A couple of things come to mind. One is, you know, the losses that he's been experiencing that make him vulnerable. I do see that parallel. Like when he is the one, you know, when we go back to season one and he does that transmission, and then he finds out here in season two that that transmission led to the death of his parents. So he has this, you know, massive loss of his parents. So he sees again, I'm trying to do the right thing. Something bad happens. You know, they go to Malachor. He's trying to help the Ghost crew figure out how to defeat these Inquisitors. And he sees Ahsoka, for all intents and purposes, you know, be lost in that temple. And then, you know, I think about also Ezra's interaction with Yoda back in Shroud of Darkness. And you can see, you know, Yoda shaking his head in frustration with Ezra because he's wanting to fight all the time. And I just wonder, you know, when he keeps trying to do the right thing and trying to do the right thing and these bad outcomes keep happening, then it starts to make sense to me why, you know, towards the end of the episode, he is opening that Sith holocron. It's almost like he's willing to say, you know what, I'm trying to do the right thing and I'm always getting defeated here. And then, of course, he looks at Kanan and sees him blinded. So they've really had it handed to him here, you know, towards the end of this season. So I'm kind of like Dan said, I'm nervous that he goes so quickly to it. At the same time, it seems like Dave Filoni and company are setting this up to have this be a constant battle for Ezra, which is when you have all these bad things happen, are you going to keep doing the right thing? Or are you going to take the easy path, which is the Sith way, right?
Exactly. Melinda?
Oh, I'm sorry, Aaron. I was just going to add, if you don't, this is just a little parental connection that I made. When Ezra, Maul, Kanan, and Ahsoka are ascending the temple, the Sith temple, or kind of like on those elevators, do you guys know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
You know, they're on their way to the top, to the obelisk, I think it was, or whatever. And at one point, Maul says we should split up so that the Inquisitors will have to split up. And Ezra ends up going with Maul on the last part of the journey, and Ahsoka and Kanan team up. And Kanan is visibly not happy about Ezra going with Darth Maul. And Ezra says to him, you know, to Kanan, trust me, I've learned more from you than, you know, you think I have. I mean, basically, that's what he's saying. But he does say, Ezra does say to Kanan, trust me. And, you know, Dan, I know you're a parent. Aaron, I know you're a parent. David, David, you have a 9-year-old. I don't know. I know how old Dan's children are, but I've got a 26-year-old and a 23-year-old. One lives in Japan and one lives in California, halfway across the country from where we live. And even though the girls are adults, they've been brought up to be independent young women, to go off and forge their own lives, which they have every right to do that, of course. They're young adults. I'm still their mom, and I still am concerned about them. And sometimes, even though I do, you know, I let them go, they have to spread their wings and follow their own lives, and I have to trust that they will keep themselves out of trouble and still enjoy life, of course. But I saw myself as Kanan at that point, and either one of my girls is Ezra, when, you know, because they have said to me, Mama, trust me, you and Daddy brought us up right, and, you know, I will make the right choices. I will make the right decisions. But, you know, I can see it from Kanan's point of view, too, that, you know, you're just, you wonder if you've ever taught them enough. And like Kanan had to do at that one particular point, you know, he had to let Ezra go. And it's just, it was quite the episode. That's why I thought, like, part of why I thought, like, this episode was the best one in the entire two seasons. There was just so much between Kanan and Ezra and Ahsoka, you know, and what she was going through and everything. And I loved, I know we haven't started talking about her yet, but I loved it when she says to Darth Vader, "I'm no Jedi," and, or whoever she said that to. But that was just, oh, I got chills. So sorry, fellas, go on. Nope,
you're fine. You're fine. And we'll be getting into that in here in just a moment. We've had a great discussion so far, but before we go into what everybody was most excited about with this episode, which I know was definitely for me, the big finale fight there that we've all been waiting for. We're going to take a minute and let Dan and Corey tell us about the Topps Trading app.
Hey, it's Dan Z.
And Corey Club.
From Coffee with Kenobi. And we are excited to let you know about the Star Wars Card Trader app from Topps.
Yeah, Dan, you remember those cards that came out in 1977, the good old days? Well, they're back again. Yeah, so it's the Star Wars Card Trader app. It has them all, as well as fantastic images from The Force Awakens, The Clone Wars, Rebels, and much more.
Absolutely. You've got your favorite characters, memorable scenes, you've got key moments. It's all there. You get credits every day for free from the app, which is available from iTunes or Google Play. Open packs from the cantina, trade with your friends, and enjoy these amazing Star Wars memories as you take your first step into a larger world.
There are so many different sets to choose from also, and there's so many great cards to chase. There's special inserts, there's rewards for completing sets and variants. It's everything you love in collecting from a galaxy far, far away.
The Star Wars Digital Card Trader Collecting App from Topps.
These are the cards you're looking for.
All right, and we're back. Thank you, Dan and Corey, for telling us all about that cool Topps app. I got it on my phone right now, and we'll play it later. But for now, we're going to jump right into what was by far one of my favorite parts of this. It was my favorite part of this episode. It's something that we've been waiting for a long time. Ever since we saw Ahsoka walk away from the Jedi Order, everybody knew if she was alive, this was bound to happen eventually. And I'm talking about Ahsoka v. Vader. So we get this colossal lightsaber fight between Ahsoka and Vader, and they let each other have it. And she's still somewhat, almost in denial of who he really is. Is that the impression you got, Dan?
Vader being in denial of who he is that what you're asking?
No, Ahsoka being almost still in denial that he is Anakin.
Oh, no, I don't think so. I think she is very aware, hence her willingness to sacrifice for the greater good. I think she's full on, and of course you have that incredibly beautiful moment where you have the mix of Matt Lanter and James Earl Jones' voice as Vader's helmet is cracked open. And no, I think she's, there's the, one of the reasons that Ahsoka is as powerful as she is that she doesn't have any misconceptions about what is. She doesn't let her bias get in the way of what she knows to be true. And that's why she's strong in the Force.
Okay. Absolutely, that's definitely true. One of the reasons Ahsoka has been so popular has been her strength and her insight. Now, when they first start, when she first walks up and they begin talking about how she couldn't believe her master could be that vile and that vicious, and Vader just basically says, "You know, Anakin was weak. I destroyed him." And Ahsoka's like, "Well, I will avenge him." And then we get this great monologue where he's like, where Vader begins talking like a Jedi. Revenge isn't a part of the Jedi way. And Ahsoka says something that I don't know if any of us wanted to hear. I mean, she had said it once before, but she said it again. "I'm no Jedi." and then this fight starts. Mm-hmm. How do you think? I mean, cause that's a huge statement to make before lunging into a combat situation, especially drawing on all her experience being fighting it as a Jedi. And at that point, do we see a little bit of anger coming out of her at this point? And if so, how much are we talking about her being possibly even remotely tempted by the dark side in this?
Oh, I love the way in here on this one. I know I just said the last one, but to me, her saying she's no Jedi has nothing to do with where her proclivities lie. Her blighter blades are white. I mean, that's as pure as it gets. I think she's basically saying, I'm not a part of their little fraternity. I still believe in good and righteousness and doing the right thing. But the Jedi rejected her and turned her away in her moment of great need. So, of course, she's abandoned that way, but she hasn't abandoned the light side of the Force, hence helping to found the rebellion. So I think there's no darkness. I think there's some anger, but you can be angry without turning to the dark side. I mean, Luke does in Return of the Jedi, but he quickly turns the other way. Her willingness, again, to sacrifice to save the crew shows that she is quite one with the good side of the Force.
Mm-hmm.
Perfect. David, what were or is your take on the whole Ahsoka there?
Well, very consistent with Dan's. I feel like she's in the perfect position to battle Vader more than anybody, obviously, on the Ghost crew, and to be able to have a bit of anger to help her take him on and battle him toe-to-toe for hopefully quite a while in there, she did. I think that's why she was able to do it, is because she could tap into that a little bit. But like Dan says, I don't think to any dangerous level for her. But I think that's why we see her take out that much damage on him as well. She's trained by him. That was something I was thinking about. And that's probably why she was able to fight him so well, is because I would guess to a large extent she knows a lot of his style and what he would do from knowing him back as far as we see what both of them in the Clone Wars movie in 2008. So it was exciting to see it. I was nervous, I'm going to tell you. Kind of like Dan was saying, that reaction with Ezra and some of his behaviors. But man, I was nervous. I was like, what is going to happen here? How are they going to play this out? And even at one point you hear very subtly Empire music in there from Empire Strikes Back. So anyways, those are a few of my thoughts on Ahsoka in that last battle.
Well, Melinda, when we're going through here, of course, Dan mentioned, of course, the fight going on, Vader's helmet gets damaged, and we get that mix of James Earl Jones and Matt Lanter's voices calling out to her, Ahsoka, and just the expression on her face as she looks at it, and she sees, is looking into the, at this point, one eye of Anakin, and we see her whole demeanor and her change at that point, because she's like, I'm not going to leave you. And when when she said that and the temple's closing up and everything, I was getting chills at this point. I mean, when you saw her, when you heard her say she's not going to leave and she starts moving back into the temple, where do you think she was going in this? I mean, obviously she's already fallen. He's no way near redemption, because he's already said he flat out says, then you're going to die. What do you think her goal is in staying at this point?
Well, I think it's actually multifaceted. For one thing, I thought, because Kanan was injured, she had to, or at least I think Ahsoka saw part of her role as being that she had to give Kanan and Ezra as much time as possible to escape, that even if it cost her life, that there had to be hope for the rebellion to go on, and they had to get back to where Hera and the rest of the Ghost crew were. I think that she, I mean, I have to admit, I haven't given this a lot of thought, but I wonder if Ahsoka ever felt semi, not really even responsible for Anakin's fall to the dark side, but he would lose one person after another, and even when or as Ahsoka and Anakin's relationship developed, she knew that there was some distance between Anakin and the Jedi Order. And because she was so much like him, I think that when she left and he let her go, you know, I mean, he did let her go. I think maybe over the years, Ahsoka may have felt that while she wasn't responsible for Anakin turning into Darth Vader by any stretch of the imagination, that was all Anakin's doing, that maybe she thought, well, she was a good influence on him, and if she had stayed, that maybe events might not have turned out the way that they did, and Darth Vader never would have been born, and, you know, all the terrible things that were happening in the Star Wars galaxy would not have been happening. And so I think that she saw herself, too, as an avenger of Anakin, knowing that Anakin and Darth Vader were one and the same, that even if it meant killing Darth Vader, that she would have a chance to avenge Anakin. And I think that was part of the reason why she stayed behind. And, you know, I think that she felt very strongly about Anakin, the same way Obi-Wan did. And both of them, I think, in the end, felt that they had dropped the ball where he was concerned. But so that's, you know, those are really the two images, or I mean, mental images that really popped into my head as I was watching that particular scene and between the two of them. And she could see beyond the helmet, just like Luke could. I mean, granted, the helmet was damaged, but at that point, but I think that her soul really spoke to Anakin's soul, just like Luke's did, and both of them knew that the only way for Anakin to be reclaimed or reborn, or however you want to put it, would be for Darth Vader to die. And, I mean, obviously she did not succeed, because we see Darth Vader in the opening scenes of A New Hope, but and he does leave the planet, and we don't know what's going, you know, what happened to Ahsoka, but it was heart-wrenching. As a longtime Star Wars fan, I say that. So.
And you're right. There's a lot out there that we don't know what happens to Ahsoka at this point. We sit there and we see what happens at the end of the fight. Everything just goes through the motions at that point. The Phantom leaves with Ezra and Chopper. And Chopper was on the planet, by the way, guys. Chopper was there.
Yes, he was.
True.
And can I... Aaron, I'm sorry. Can I say one more quick thing about Ahsoka?
Sure.
I love the opening scene between her and Rex, and when Rex is trying to, you know, tell her she can't go on this mission. And he says to her, I outrank you. And she says to him, you know, no, I outrank you. And he says, well, my experience is, you know, greater than yours. I mean, he's a lot older than she is. And you'd think that that would be the case. But then she makes the comment about, no, I have all the experience, or, you know, more experience. And, you know, for someone so young to say that to someone who's been around and in more battles than she has. And I thought that was very telling about Ahsoka's maturity and where she was. And she was ready to face Darth Vader. So
she certainly was. She certainly was. And it all boils down to this question right here, and I'm going to ask each of you this, and I'm going to start with David, especially since you sat there with your kids and you brought this up earlier in the conversation there with the opening thoughts. Is Ahsoka alive?
Yeah, that was interesting. I was going to mention this. After watching it with Lena, she's my 9-year-old. My 12-year-old was there as well, Eli, and he was pretty intent on it too. But afterwards I asked her, I said, well, what kind of emotion do you have right now? What are you feeling, Lena, as I'm looking at you? And she says, well, it's not scary. It's not that I'm nervous. And then she says, it's like not knowing if Han Solo's dead. It's unknown. And she says, it's a mystery. And I said, well, tell me more about this. She says, well, someone or something came and got Han Solo, you know, off a Starkiller base. And I thought it was so cool that she still has that hope in her. And so then she said, someone noticed Ahsoka and they went and they got her too, just like someone came and got Han Solo. And then she ended it with, but I still don't know. And as I jump in, like kind of like I was saying, like from a certain point of view, again, consistent with Dan's article, I think from Lena's point of view, she's really hopeful that Ahsoka's alive. As an adult, I very much am as well. I think, you know, the ground that was laid in the previous episodes, especially Mystery of Chopper Base, really shows the Convarees show up with Ahsoka. And we see them scattered throughout. And, you know, at the very end there, you know, one of the things I do wonder is if she does live on in one of those Convarees, either that or, you know, a lot of people alluded, and I talked to you about this, Aaron, the other night, was I went back and watched the Mortis trilogy with the father, the son, and the daughter. And the coloration of the Convaree in The Mystery of Chopper Base and also in this one looked a lot like the coloration of that daughter. So you sit there and ask, well, is it kind of like, is this Convaree something watching over Ahsoka, like this daughter? Or is it something like there's a transformation and Ahsoka is going to live on in some form in that Convaree? So I think for Lena, she's hopeful that Ahsoka's alive. I'm just presenting some ideas. Obviously, I hope she is. Dave Filoni's been pretty clear that Ahsoka is not going to be in Rebels anymore. So I guess I'm still holding out hope that she's still alive.
How about you, Melinda? Is she alive?
Well, David, I must say, if Han Solo is brought back to life, I don't know what that's going to say for me as a Star Wars fan, but...
I think you might have a
stroke. I mean, not to like dim your daughter's hopefulness. I would never want to do that. But
I know
if it would be brought back to life, so would Qui-Gon Jinn, because he was speared with a lightsaber the same way that Han was. So, and
hey, Melinda, and Qui-Gon said it. Aaron what? Said it. This is Star Wars. Anybody can come back, Melinda.
Qui-Gon. They've already seen his Force ghost.
Yes, that is true. That is true. Okay, but bringing it back to Ahsoka, do we have Ahsoka? Yeah. Is she alive? Is she a ghost?
Ahsoka, I love that character. She's she's really grown on me over the years. I, as much as I would like to say, I hope she survived. I think she's dead. I think she honestly gave her life in true Jedi fashion. It doesn't take a Jedi to give one's life for the greater good. But I think she gave her life, not that she wanted to die, just it wound up that way. But I think she's dead so that the rebellion could live on. And, so Kanan and Ezra could get away.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Dan?
There is zero doubt in my mind that she's fully alive. And the reason I say that is very simply from a storytelling perspective. I can't believe that a character we've known since 2008 that is so incredibly beloved and helped to flesh out Anakin Skywalker and Obi-Wan and the entire world of the Clone Wars much more powerfully than episodes 2 and 3 ever could. There's no way Dave Filoni is going to deny us that closure with that character. There's no way we're not going to see her move on if that is in fact her fate. Now, she's not in the original trilogy, clearly. And I don't believe she's mentioned in Aftermath, although I'm pretty sure that Hera is. So I think she's alive. I don't think she's become some sort of spiritual entity or force ghost, because Qui-Gon knows how to do that. He taught Yoda. Yoda taught Obi-Wan, and so did Qui-Gon. Those are the only ones that know it. Anakin knows it because he is the one that brings balance to the Force. He's the most powerful Jedi that ever lived, as far as we know. Rey may surpass that. But I think she's alive for sure. I don't know what happened. Dave knows what happened. He's Dave Filoni. Not Dave Monters, or if he does, he hasn't told us yet. but I think we're going to get it revealed somehow, some way. I know there's an Ahsoka novel coming out. It's not going to cover that time period, but she'll be back.
Okay. Well, I want to share something with you real quick, because we did, before we recorded this episode, I put out about a week ago, people to send thoughts on. And I got an interesting one from, actually, Legends Library host Randy Theriau, who shot me a thought on whether he thought Ahsoka was alive or dead. And he said, simply, I think Ahsoka is wearing her lightsaber as she walks into the dark of the cavern. A Force spirit does not need to wear lightsabers. So, conclusion, Ahsoka lives. That's a simple thought there.
What about you, Aaron? What do you think?
I have a hard time believing that we're done with Ahsoka. Ultimately, I think her downfall would be Vader. And it naturally, I assumed it was. But after seeing that fight and seeing him limp away the way he did, he couldn't bring himself to kill Luke. I don't think he could bring himself to kill Ahsoka.
See, that I disagree with.
You don't think so?
No. I mean, Dave has been pretty clear about that, too. Darth Vader is incapable of being redeemed until he meets his son. So even Ahsoka, in all of her splendor and all of her power and the emotion that they have for one another, she is the biggest threat to his existence, because she is the only one that can fully remind him of who he was as Anakin Skywalker. He doesn't want to be reminded of Anakin Skywalker, hence being encased in black armor and refusing to look at himself in the mirror because of what happened with Padme. So I think Ahsoka needs to make tracks.
Touche. Okay.
As in disappear?
I hope I'm wrong. What's that?
I'm sorry. When you said that she needs to make tracks, do you mean disappear?
Absolutely. Okay. And that's probably what she's going to do.
Go into hiding again.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Personally, I hope she is alive. I hope he is. I hope we see her again. I don't think we'll see her anytime soon, though. I think her story is done as of right now when it comes to the Rebel stories. But hopefully in the future, I personally think she's alive. But overall, this was a fantastic, fantastic episode. Definitely one of the highlights of doing this show has been this episode, because it's been just a fantastic discussion on by far what has been the best episode, in my opinion, since the series started. We're going to go through, we're wrapping it up. I know, Dan, you got time restraints. We're going to go ahead and wrap everything up real quick and start with final thoughts. Dan, what's your final thoughts on Twilight of the Apprentice?
My final thoughts are that I thought it was a wonderful way to end the season. This was promised to us as the Empire Strikes Back season, and it certainly was. People are, you know, not dismembered, but they lose their vision. Allegiances change. Characters that we love disappear. And Vader confronting a beloved hero. I thought it was a very powerful episode that left me wanting more and left me feeling a bit unsatisfied. And time will tell if that will be assuaged in my psyche based on what Ezra does in the future.
Perfect. And Melinda, what were your final thoughts on this episode?
Gosh, I'd have to say, Aaron, that I'm really looking forward to season 3 because I want to see what happens to Ezra and Kanan and actually the rest of the Ghost crew, but mostly those two young Jedi. And I thought that this was really powerful. And for once, Darth Vader's former identity is revealed to someone. Granted, you know, one of the few people who knew him before he became Darth Vader, but I know I said I think Ahsoka is dead, and I firmly believe that, but there's the very hopeful side of my heart that hopes that she isn't, even if she goes limping off into the sunset somewhere. So, and I hope Darth Maul stays dead.
Well, we know he flew away in a TIE fighter, so he did survive.
Yep.
So
he's like a bad rash.
Hey, he just keeps coming back. Not enough salve yet. David, what were your final thoughts on Twilight of the Apprentice?
Yeah, just a few things. One, and you guys know I love this, it just really explored the mythological aspects of Star Wars further. So, you know, there were so many details that we could have got into and gone for a couple hours on it. But I just absolutely love that. Developed the characters further. And it answered a bunch of questions, but it brought up more. You know, like Dan just mentioned, this was maybe Empire, right? So I'm just curious, is next season Return of the Jedi, is season 3 the last season? What's Maul going to do? I'm curious about, I said earlier, is Kanan permanently blind or not? Will Sabine get a jetpack, right? I'm curious about that. she said it in Mystery of Chopper Base, so she's got to get a jetpack. And like I mentioned a little bit earlier, I'm really curious, will Ezra fall towards the dark side even further, trying to defeat his enemies, because he's been trying to do it the right way, and it's been just really tough sledding for him. So so those are things I'm looking forward to, but overall just really enjoyed it.
I know it was very telling, you know, when Ahsoka says to him, or like Ezra says, let's open this holocron. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but, you know, let's open it. And Ahsoka says, a Jedi cannot. And Ezra does. And but I hope he goes back, you know, and stays with the light.
I feel like he's going to be like Quinlan Vos in Dark Disciple. And if you've read that book, you know, I don't want to spoil it, but I think that this is sort of what I think they're going with him. I don't have any inside information on that, but just a hunch. And by the way, this isn't even my favorite episode of the season.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. Was?
I think the honorable ones.
Oh, that was a great episode.
With Zeb and Callus, that was tremendous. Was
a tremendous episode there. Yeah. That was a lot of fun in that episode. Overall, I loved this episode. The there's so many aspects in this episode with Ezra's playing with the dark side. There's so many questions left unanswered with him opening the holocron, Kanan's sight, where's Maul, where does Vader go from here at this point? Chopper can fly a TIE fighter and blast Inquisitors. I mean, that opens a whole new world for him. I mean, overall, this was, for me, it was a great episode. I am calling it my favorite. It was my favorite so far. And mainly because that fight there at the end really hit home for me with the whole Ahsoka Anakin. It's something we'd been longing to see forever since she walked away. We knew if when they announced Rebels, and when she showed up on Rebels, this was something I knew was coming from everybody knew was coming from that point. So this was something that I've been waiting for with anxious, bated breath. Honestly, I was a little surprised it came this early in the series, especially when they announced season 3. I figured this would probably be something we would see closer to the end of the series. But to have it this at the end of season 2, they did it phenomenal. Great job there. I'd be dismiss if I didn't tip my hat to Kevin Kiner. His soundtrack again was on par. I mean, it was perfect. It heightened the emotion of the episode. It tied everything together just the way the soundtracks always have done for Star Wars. His use of the choir pieces during the fights, the dark, somber music, it was perfect in my opinion. So overall, this was my favorite episode, which is why when we go into grading the episode, for me, this is getting an A right up top. And that's just by
not an A plus.
A plus. This is
you're talking to a teacher.
I got a teacher, and I'm married to a teacher. I should know this.
You should. You should.
I should smack my hand on that. A plus on that. Obviously, by far the music, the fight, Chopper hiding inside a TIE fighter. It doesn't get much better than that. I thought it was great. David, how would you grade Twilight of the Apprentice?
A plus as well. I'm right there with you, Aaron.
Melinda?
A plus, definitely. And can I just, I know I keep adding things, Aaron, but you know how I compared Ezra a little bit to Anakin? And I compare him a little bit to Luke, too, because Luke, you know, was so untrained, even though he had strong force abilities for a long time. And in that battle, that final battle with Darth Vader, Luke does tread really close to the dark side and is able to pull himself back. And I mean, Ezra didn't do it the same way that Luke did, but he does realize the error of his ways at the Ezra at the very end there. So I think there's hope, and that's what we're left with at the end of this episode and this season. And I do. It's not the only episode of the season I give an A+ to, but definitely it gets it. So
perfect. And not to play devil's advocate, he does open that holocron there at the end.
I know.
Does he really?
Yeah, I don't think he's
know the error of his way.
No, he wouldn't open it if he. Again, the path to evil is always paved with good intentions, and he's treading some pretty choppy, shark infested waters. That's he's essentially doing force crack. There's nothing good can come of this.
Force crack. I like that, Dan. Like that. Force crack.
Patent pending.
I think you should.
Go ahead, grade the episode for us, Dan.
I'm sort of teetering between an A and an A minus. And mostly because of lightsaber helicopters. Just kidding. no, I like it. I love ambiguity. It's one of my favorite things, not only in Star Wars, but just in storytelling in general. But it isn't quite an A. I had a hard time with Ezra's turn and being so easily tempted by Darth Maul. He's not mature and sophisticated enough to be a double agent, and you. Quillen Voss has proven you can't truly be a double agent. The Sith, the dark side of the Force is too powerful. You can't play with the devil and expect to come out smelling like roses. So I'm going to give it an A.
Perfect, perfect. And of course, so I mean, overall, we're still giving it. Everybody gives the episode an A. Write in, let us know what you think. We want to know what your thoughts are on Twilight of the Apprentice. Do a quick round. If our listeners want to get in touch with you and let you know what they think of this episode or share their ideas with you or just want to talk Star Wars, what is the best way for them to do that? Dan?
Well, I co-host a podcast with Corey Club called Coffee with Kenobi. you can find me there. You can find me at Mr. Zare, and I'm currently on Coffee with Kenobi exploring the Clone Wars. I just released a blog this week looking at the theatrical release, which is canonically the third episode of the Clone Wars. And after going through this series the way that I am thus far, I see how beautifully it fits together. It's quite wonderful. And, of course, you can catch me twice a month for StarWars.com and my Setting Skywalker's articles.
Perfect. Perfect. And I've been loving those Clone Wars articles. I've been enjoying that. So
I really appreciate that. So
you're welcome. You're welcome. David, how could people get a hold of you if they'd like to talk Star Wars or share their thoughts on the show?
Yeah, the best way is at Twitter, on Twitter at David_Modders. Last name is MODDERS.
Perfect. And Melinda?
I don't Twitter.
You don't Twitter?
I don't Twitter. But people can reach me through Coffee with Kenobi at MelindaW@coffeewithkenobi.com or through one of my blogs on Coffee with Kenobi.
Perfect. And of course, you can reach the show as well. Email us here at Rebels Reactions, rebelsreactions@coffeewithkenobi.com. The show is also on Twitter at Rebels Reactions. We are twits. Either way, we're on Twitter. having a good old time, as always. But definitely, if you want to reach out and get a hold of me as well, I'm on Twitter at T.A. Harris, 1210-79. You can email me at coffeewithkenobi@coffeewithkenobi.com. And, of course, I have the blog goes up on the 28th of the month as well, each month for the website, coffeewithkenobi.com. Check it out. We got some great shows there on the website you can listen to. The main show with Dan and Corey is there. We got... We read the email from Randy Theriault earlier. Him and Luke have the Legends Library where they examine the Legends series of books, formerly known as the Expanded Universe. We have, of course, Lattes with Leia, our newest show. Phenomenal, phenomenal show with Amy. And Amy, right? It's Amy and...
Amy Radcliffe and Dr. Andrea Letamendi.
I knew it was a doctor. I just kept saying I was trying to say Dr. Amy, and I knew that wasn't right. Dr. Andrea, that's right. And of course, we also have the comics with Kenobi with Jeff and Matt as well. So we got you covered on whatever your fandom is there. So check out coffeewithkenobi.com and look us all up there. Dan, David, Melinda, thank you so much for joining me tonight. This was a fabulous discussion. I thoroughly enjoyed it, and we will definitely be doing this again because we have a whole new season to go through after this hiatus. So thank you so much for joining me. I hope you all have a wonderful time, a wonderful hiatus, whatever y'all are doing. Thank you so much for listening, everybody. May the Force be with you, and remember, this is the podcast you're looking for.
Well, kid, you pulled it off. Was there ever any doubt?
Yes.
Chopper, get us out of here!
If you would like to respond to our question of the show, have a comment, or just want to say hello, send us an email or MP3 at feedback@coffeewithkenobi.com. Or if you have a specific question or comment for either of us individually, email us at danz@coffeewithkenobi.com or coreyc@coffeewithkenobi.com or visit us at coffeewithkenobi.com and click on the Contact Us section or comment on one of the stories featured on the site. If you enjoy the show, please write a review in iTunes or Stitcher. You can also like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/coffeewithkenobi, as well as keep up to date at our Twitter feed @coffeewithkenobi. You can also find us on Tumblr at coffeewithkenobi.tumblr.com. If you enjoy the jazz music, the album is Eye to Eye by Steve Torak.
This is Spectre One. I need a lift.
This podcast is not endorsed by the Walt Disney Company or Lucasfilm Limited. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. The official Star Wars website can be found at www.starwars.com. Star Wars, all names, sounds, and any other Star Wars-related items are registered trademarks and or copyrights of Disney and their respective trademark and copyright holders. All original content of this podcast is the intellectual property of Coffee with Kenobi unless otherwise indicated.
This is the podcast you're looking for.
There's no one here. Move along.
From Topps comes the all-new digital card collecting app, free to download from iTunes or Google Play, Star Wars Card Trader.
For the first time ever, collect and trade everything from legendary 1977 Star Wars cards to new cards featuring exclusive content from Star Wars Episode 7, The Force Awakens.
All from the comfort of your mobile devices, Star Wars Card Trader.
These are the cards you're looking for.